At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to the Barbell Medicine Podcast, where we bring modern medicine to strength and conditioning and strength and conditioning to modern medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Jordan Feigenbaum. I'm joined by the second most handsome doctor in North America, Dr. Austin Baracchi. We've got a mystery case. You know, as is my custom, I have to predict whether or not you're going to get this case. And honestly, I should just assume that you're going to get it, but to create some drama, which, you know, I feel like I'm a sportscaster here. You're watching, you know, a top-seeded team versus a bottom dweller in the conference, and you have to create some drama out of nowhere to get people to watch. So how do I get people to listen outside of hearing you opine eloquently about your clinical acumen? I think you're not going to get it.
All right.
I think this is maybe the hardest one yet, not because of the actual case being that difficult, like the medical diagnostic requiring something out of left field that you don't have experience in, but because the history and the exam findings are so limited, you're really, I don't know, we'll see. You know what? We'll see. So let's get started. 31-year-old man presents to the emergency department for the second time in as many days due to left thigh pain. 2 days ago, when he presented to the emergency department, he said that he'd had a fall and he hurt his left leg. Exam at the time showed a red area and swelling in the mid-anterior thigh. X-ray was negative and the patient left AMA. That just means against medical advice. You read in the notes that the attending called him and I quote, aesthetic weightlifter, unquote. This time, the patient is back and says that the swelling and pain are both worse. He also said that he's had difficulty breathing and feels like he can't think straight. During the physical exam, the patient is found to have a fever to 100.4, but other vitals are difficult to obtain as the patient is very agitated, though he does not appear to have difficulty breathing on room air. You're able to do a lower extremity exam, and it's significant for a large red swollen area comprising the majority of the anterior, that's the front, and lateral, that's the side, aspects of the thigh. It is very warm and tender to palpation. Knee and ankle range of motion are reduced, secondary to pain on the left side, and there's a +2 pitting edema in the lower limb on the left side. There's no sort of breaks in the skin, no lacerations, no bumps, or anything like that, and he has no known past medical history. So before I go any further, any thoughts on what's going on here?
Wow, this is interesting, a bit bizarre. So as I tend to do, we'll just summarize kind of what I heard. So a 31-year-old guy coming in for acute left thigh pain, swelling, and redness that's been going on for 2 days since a fall. And this seems to be associated with some other symptoms to include some shortness of breath, some, I guess, mental status changes. We'll say he says he can't think straight. He's maybe agitated and a fever. So if I could just focus in on the main primary concern here, we have this post-traumatic left leg pain, redness, swelling, and warmth with a fever. And so the combination of those things, you know, leads me, it's interesting to see that this patient has kind of more of a systemic response to perhaps whatever is going on in that area. Redness and warmth and swelling are all characteristics of inflammation. And of course, if you have a traumatic injury to your thigh, then you can get a little bruise there. It can get a little locally irritated, but that wouldn't usually generate a systemic response as evidenced by a fever or neurologic changes or something else like that. And so we're going to have to try to figure out why he's presenting with this more generalized systemic syndrome, not just what's going on in the leg. As I've done before, when we break down, you know, leg symptoms, especially unilateral leg symptoms like this, I'm thinking about, is there something going on with the musculoskeletal components, the muscles, the soft tissues, the bones, the ligaments, the tendons, et cetera? Or could there be something with the vascular component in the leg, the arteries or the veins? Could there be something going on with the nerves going into the leg? Those are kind of like the main compartments that you can break the leg down into. Of those, I would say that the muscles and soft tissues and vascular components would be the things that I'd be more concerned about with this type of a presentation, and something wrong with the nerves would move down a little bit. As far as what those things could be, obviously in the setting of trauma, you can have local soft tissue injury, some, you know, bleeding into the area, hematoma, leakage of fluid, a clot, like we've seen before, etc. However, once we have this fever, this systemic response of inflammation, that opens up several other possibilities and things we need to think about, because again, that is odd. The first thing we would think about in this situation is an infection. And so could there be a local soft tissue infection, which would be very common, something like cellulitis in the area, or a much more severe type of infection in the soft tissues like myositis, pyomyositis, necrotizing fasciitis. Those are all the kind of things, infections that can involve the soft tissues. And the question would be how such an infection got there. Was there some sort of local inoculation of a bacterium, for example, in the traumatic injury? You said there was no skin breaks or anything else like that to, as a way to introduce an infectious organism to that area. Or could there be an infectious origin someplace else that then traveled to that area, for example, a bloodstream infection, and then it ends up seeding the leg somehow by way of bacteremia. So an infection is the first thing we think about with like an acute febrile syndrome like this, with local inflammation to the leg, pointing me to that area as my most suspicious site of concern. And then the question is, how did it get there? Other causes of fever and inflammation that we think about are things like autoimmune diseases and cancers and certain drugs and other conditions. But all of those are much, much, much lower on my list right now, particularly because we have a 31-year-old guy who we presume is healthy at the moment, although maybe we'll find out he has, I don't know, HIV, or he has known lymphoma or something else that would change it. But I'm not going to assume that at the moment. And with how suddenly this syndrome presented the acuity, you have to think about infection first before you start entertaining those other possibilities. So what I would do next, I mean, we've already examined the leg. The only thing I didn't hear was a pulse exam. But short of that, you know, we'd be considering imaging. If we were concerned about something like compartment syndrome, as we have been before, getting a sense of pressures and things like that in the area, and then potentially looking for, is there evidence or a reason to believe there's an infectious focus there? Or is there something more, is there an infectious source elsewhere that is then somehow distributing throughout the body?
Yeah. Well, I don't have a pulse rate for you, unfortunately. Nowhere in the entire report is there any mention of a pulse rate, so you don't get that either. But we do have some labs for you, all right? Okay. So brace yourself. These are strange. So first off, he's anemic with a hemoglobin of 10. His MCV is 82. His white count is normal at 4.6, although he does have some lymphopenia and high eosinophils. His ESR is 120. His CRP is 487, so those are both markers of inflammation. Austin will talk about those later, but those are both high. His creatine kinase is 4,500, which is elevated. He's got a lactate dehydrogenase of 610, elevated troponin, mild elevation. HIV test negative. We have blood cultures are pending. X-ray of the legs negative. CT leg is also pending. So before I go any further, now that you've got some laboratory data, any thoughts?
Yeah. So for a 31-year-old guy to be anemic to 10 is unusual. And unless we have a reason to a history of bleeding, and our concern in this situation is potential bleeding into that leg in that area, which a CT will be more useful to determine, which you said is pending, just kind of teasing me with that at the moment, but that's okay. So unless he's bleeding into the leg, without any other history of bleeding, it makes you wonder about, is this an anemia of chronic inflammation? When patients have a chronic inflammatory disorder, they can develop an anemia with a normal MCV like this. And so then that would raise the concern of, well, this guy came in with 2 days of these symptoms, but has there been something else brewing going on much longer? And for example, could he have had a chronic inflammatory condition going on, an autoimmune disease like lupus or vasculitis or something else like that, and then that led to the anemia? And also chronic inflammatory conditions, for example, can make you more prone to clotting. And then he could develop a thrombosis in that leg, a DVT or something else going on with the arterial side in that leg. So that's one possibility. The white blood cell count you said is normal, but an overall white blood cell count is often less helpful than the breakdown, the differential. The lymphopenia, low lymphocytes, the first thing you want to do when you see that is check an HIV test. So that was helpful to know that that was negative. And then the high eosinophils, there's a relatively lengthy list of possible causes for something like that. and I would alter my thinking based on how high they are. Is this just a relative eosinophilia or absolute eosinophilia?
6.1%.
Yeah, so the percents are actually much less useful than absolute numbers. Absolute count. If it's over, I would have to do some quick math to see if it's over 500 or if it's over 1,000 or something.
I did not calculate that out for you, but yes.
But yeah, so certain autoimmune conditions, parasites, allergic conditions, certain cancers, lymphomas, things like that can all lead to high eosinophils. So that's not moving me a ton at the moment, particularly just based on the percentage alone. We know he's super inflamed. Those inflammatory markers very high. We already knew they were going to be relatively high because he came in with a fever. And then similarly, the LDH level also, you know, is what we call a very nonspecific test. LDH, lactate dehydrogenase, is an enzyme that's in all sorts of cells. And so anytime there's higher cell turnover or cells getting broken down for any reason, then LDH can get released into the circulation. So sometimes people, you know, have jokingly referred to LDH as lymphoma detecting hormone, but it is not nearly that specific. So just in the same reason his CK is elevated from CK getting released from his muscle cells, LDH could also be coming from those muscle cells. Or he could be having hemolysis, and that could be why he's anemic, for example, and his red blood cells are bursting, leading that LDH to be increasing. So there's all sorts of different ways that you could get there. So the imaging, you gave me a normal leg x-ray, which just tells me he doesn't have a fracture or a gigantic fluid collection that's so big and obvious that you would see it on a plain film x-ray. So a contrasted CT scan of the leg, particular focus on that area and the vasculature around that area, would be the most helpful next step. And as you mentioned, they have blood cultures that they've collected. And so they're looking for that kind of bloodstream infection that I alluded to earlier to see, is there something going on from someplace else? So overall, how would I summarize with the additional data? I mean, we have this guy with a clearly inflammatory syndrome, and the main kind of signal or focus for inflammation that we have is in that leg. And so I still want to get a closer look at that leg. Most of this didn't change my opinion of where I want to focus my energy at the moment. The only question is that anemia that he has, is that because he's bleeding into his leg, or does he have a chronic anemia of inflammation because he's got some undiagnosed inflammatory disease that's been going on for much longer?
Well, his CT came back. It showed air bubbles and subcutaneous thickening in the left gluteal region. The patient also suddenly remembered that he injected anabolic steroids into his left thigh regularly. In fact, the case report calls this pharmacological anamnesis. I was like, great, great verbiage. In any case, he was whisked off to surgery, but while he's whisked off to surgery due to these air bubbles, would you care to come up with a diagnosis here while the blood cultures are still pending?
Totally. Yeah. So now, as you know, I mentioned before, we're concerned about a focus of inflammation in that leg. My first concern with that focus of inflammation was infection. And the two possibilities was, is there some kind of local inoculation into that area somehow, or did it get there by traveling from the bloodstream by a different route? And so here now we've uncovered through more thorough and detailed history taking, this guy's directly inoculating things into his extremity. And so that comes with it the risk of introducing infection into the area. And in particular, having air in your soft tissues is concerning for particular types of organisms or particular types of infectious syndromes. For example, we can see gas formation in the tissues in the setting of necrotizing fasciitis from certain organisms, in particular certain anaerobic organisms, Clostridium and other sorts of bugs like that can get into soft tissues and generate gas. And that is a surgical emergency. And so that is an adequate explanation. So we can say he either has some form of, you know, either necrotizing fasciitis, pyomyositis, some sort of, you know, soft tissue muscle infection by way of, you know, him introducing it with presumably non-sterile technique and or non-sterile needles.
Yeah. So blood and tissue cultures came back while he's in the OR showed that he had Clostridium. He had a fasciotomy removing significant portions of the rectus femoris and vastus lateralis for necrotizing fasciitis of the left lower limb. He actually died 5 days later due to multi-organ system failure. Yeah. On autopsy, they did a hair follicle exam that showed the patient was taking testosterone propionate, so it's a short-acting testosterone analog, clenbuterol, stenazolol, which people know as Winstrol, trenbolone, oxandrolone, which is known as Anavar, and tamoxifen for at least the last 30 days. Yeah. They were pretty impressed with this particular patient's immunodeficiency, as they referred to it as, basically no white count effectively, and then the lymphopenia and the eosinophilia. They thought that he might had some maybe underlying immunodeficiency and actually opined quite eloquently about the potential immunosuppression of anabolics. So before I go into that, that's kind of where I spent the focus of this for the clinical pearls here. Any thoughts on you know, this sort of relative immunodeficiency? I mean, initially you jumped right to, hey, what's his HIV test? Because you were kind of wondering like something going on there. But does this patient strike you as like frankly immunodeficient?
No, honestly. So overall, yeah, very unfortunate case that he died from this. All in all, not not terribly uncommon syndrome, although the way he got there by way of injecting anabolics is, I would say, less common than as a cause of, you know, something like necrotizing fasciitis or clostridial sepsis, which is what he had here. And so the diagnosis, the syndrome, all of that totally fits. This all makes sense. I am much less convinced of that explanation just based on looking at his white count, for example. It is not unusual for patients who have bad inflammatory conditions, who have infections, to not necessarily have a super high white blood cell count. Sometimes they even have a low white blood cell count, and that's not necessarily indicative of immunodeficiency. Some will say, you know, it's thought to represent the white blood cells leaving the bloodstream and going out into the tissues where they're needed, and so that can alter those concentrations. Additionally, while I did mention that when I see lymphopenia, the first thing I want to check is an HIV test because HIV infects lymphocytes and can make them go down. Really, any infection, any stressful syndrome can cause lymphopenia. Saw boatloads of patients during the COVID times very commonly presented with lymphopenia, not because they're immunodeficient, not because they had HIV, but because getting a viral infection can make your lymphocyte count go down, especially in relative terms, if not in absolute terms as well. And the eosinophil count, again, like I mentioned, you gave me the percentage, which is not a number that I rely on in practice as much as absolute values there. So I don't know of data looking at like, you know, boatloads of anabolic use and how that can impact your immune system. It sounds like there may be some plausible mechanisms that they cited there, but I do not think that in other words, it is not surprising to me that a guy got clostridial sepsis and necrotizing fasciitis and died from it, even though he's a 31-year-old guy, because this can destroy anybody.
Hey guys, it's Jordan with Barbell Medicine. Summer is here, and that means a lot of you are going to want to spend more time outside and less time on meal prep, all while staying on track with your nutrition. For many, a meal prep service like Factor can bridge that gap. Now, I've been using Factor for a while now, just here and there when I'm spending more time away from home or don't have time to cook, and it's made my day delicious and easy. Meals are ready in just 2 minutes, and they have everything from breakfast to dinner and even dessert, so you can stay fueled with easy, nutritious options. They also have 35 different meals and more than 60 add-ons. I am a creature of habit, but there's a lot of different stuff to choose from, so you'll always have new flavors to explore. So head to factormeals.com/BBM50 and use code BBM50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month. That's code BBM50 at factormeals.com/BBM50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Actually, the case report was pretty well done. So hats off to the authors. Their discussion of, you know, the immunodeficiency and potential causes, I felt like was, I mean, if that's kind of the line they're gonna take, if they're gonna plant their flag and go with that, I would have preferred like additional discussion over potential mechanisms. So I did that myself. So let's talk about the immune system function and how that changes secondary to anabolic use. But before we do that, we need to kind of jump into like how do anabolics work in general. So the main mechanism of anabolic steroids is similar to other steroid hormones in that it binds to an intracellular protein, so a protein inside the cell, known as an androgen receptor in target tissues. And this is specifically in the cell's nucleus. So this receptor steroid complex then binds to DNA within the nucleus, which leads to transcription into RNA and then translation into proteins, all that stuff you forgot about from high school biology. All right. So it's inside the cell that forms this complex of the androgen receptor and the steroid hormone. And then it does stuff to DNA to make things happen within that cell and in the surrounding area. The steroid hormones can also work directly on the outside of cells and alter the way that they function if they're floating around in high concentrations. So for example, if somebody is using high amounts of anabolic steroids. This happens in a number of different white blood cell lines. It's been shown a number of times where actually just the steroid hormone contacting the outside of the cell can change its like physicochemical properties and change its function. Okay, so let's get into some research here. There are multiple animal and cell lines from animals showing immunosuppression with various anabolic agents. So for example, this one study looked at what happens if you give animals Deca-Durabolin, so nandrolone, or Anadrol, and they saw a reduction in antibody formation and some other immune system-related hormones after they infected those animals or the cell lines with a virus. So effectively, some immunosuppression there. Testosterone, given at high doses in rats, shows some initial immunosuppression in the first few days after the injection, but it tends to normalize 10 days after the injection. Seems like if there's an intact steroid nucleus, there seems to be some immunosuppressive effects, whereas if it's been broken down, so later on, there it seems to normalize. Now, in humans, we're really going into the weeds here, all right? There was a study. It was a survey study on gym patrons during COVID. And of this, of the gym patrons that responded to the survey, 7.5% reported that they were currently using anabolic steroids. And they had a much higher risk and rate of COVID infection, 35.9% in the anabolic users versus 19% in the non-users in the same survey. So almost a 5x increase in risk. There was another study also done during COVID times. We're probably going to get dinged for saying COVID so many times on this podcast, but here we go. It was 237 male strength athletes that were using anabolic steroids, completed this questionnaire in May of 2020 and then later on in the fall of 2020. And they said they had reduced training frequency and they had dropped their doses of anabolic steroids. So maybe the reason for the increase in infection that was seen in the previous study wasn't due to like anabolic steroids. Because if they were lowering their doses, you know, maybe it just has to do with engaging in risky behaviors, for example. But, you know, we wouldn't expect the same effects from different agents because they tend to vary. Overall, it seems like there's some short-term immunosuppression. There was a study in a group of 24 male bodybuilders who are self-administering different types of anabolic steroids, such as Deca, that's nandrolone, oxandrolone, that's Anavar, and stanozolol, it's Winstrol. They were monitored during the peak dosing period of one cycle of steroids, and they were compared against non-drug-using bodybuilders. The study found no significant differences between lymphocyte subpopulations in the different study groups, as it was unable to demonstrate any alteration in the relative distribution or number of most white blood cells. There's another double-blind placebo-controlled study of healthy young men who were administered known superphysiological doses of testosterone enanthate for 6 weeks. The study found no significant difference between the placebo and the testosterone group for lymphocyte numbers. So overall, anabolics may affect immune system function. It would be weird if it didn't. And I guess if you took the most charitable take, based on this case report, maybe some immunosuppression in the short term for some agents, but it could also stimulate the immune system at longer periods of time. It just depends on the agent, the person, dosing, stuff like that. And yeah, tough to get a good sense of what happens with anabolics here.
Yeah, kind of interesting. Also, I think part of it is what your outcome measures are in these things, because I do not put a lot of stock in just like measuring lymphocyte counts as a measure of somebody's immune status, yes. Right? So studies that are like, oh, they're white blood cell count or the lymphocyte count went down or went up, that is not to me indicative of, you know, actual, you know, changes in somebody's immune competency or deficiency. So yeah. Study design, not ideal for some of those things.
I know. And that's the extent of the rabbit hole. I was like, give me some more. I mean, again, you would expect, so again, just, this is us just speculating here, right? But you would expect that someone who's hypogonadal to in general have a reduced immune system function compared to somebody who's eugonadal. If you were just guessing, you're like, well, it's got to be involved on some level. And so if I had to guess, it's probably reduced immune system function. You could counter that by saying, well, evolutionarily, we need to preserve the immune system function for, you know, all sorts of, to survive so we can pass our genes on, right? So like maybe that's just, we have multiple redundant mechanisms to preserve that even if you're hypogonadal. I guess things get a little murkier when you talk about super physiological doses of multiple agents all combined together, right? So yeah, I wonder, I mean, this guy, I suspect, you know, he was on five different agents or so. And I think about, you know, oral stuff versus injectable stuff, you know, so go back up. He was on test that's injected. Tren is probably also injected. And the other stuff is probably oral, although you could get injectable Winstrol, for example. I don't know. It's a big, probably a big syringe, you know, two and a half cc's or something right into the leg. And yeah, without using aseptic technique, just probably seeded that area. I don't know. I would have expected him to have a higher white count if it was just by the book, but you know, like you said, not particularly impressive that it wasn't elevated.
Yeah. Good common lesson that I end up, you know, teaching trainees when they're, you know, evaluating their patient and presenting an assessment of when they say something like, I don't think they have an infection because the white blood cell count is normal, that promptly gets shot down as a justification to rule out infection, because tons of patients can have all sorts of infections and the white blood cell count is a very crude, you know, tool for that. Not very useful to rule it in or rule it out.
Yeah. Very cool. Yeah. Well, you know, maybe we'll do a series of cases on just anabolic steroids. We can discuss all of them, you know.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.